Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. 2 weeks has become 3 weeks for LeBron James. Can the Lakers hang on that much longer? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcast. By the way, sometimes on Saturdays and Sundays, you got those sneaky Friday games, those sneaky Saturday games. Check back. There's often a show. So, it's crunch time for us just as much as it's crunch time for them, Andy. They're not the only team in a playoff push right now. Locked On Lakers on YouTube, which is quickly approaching 13,000 subscribers. Thank you all very much for the acceleration of this channel. It's exponential growth, Andy, I believe is how they describe it in math terms.
The audience is expanding at the rate that rabbits mate. We'll just leave it at that.
Man, it's just rabbits are
randy.
Prolific.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Difficult to satisfy.
More. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
Some might say they have a sex addiction, Brian.
When rabbits talk about this sort of thing, like, we'll say, like, oh man, they're like procreating like bunnies. What do they say? Do they just say like us, or do they have a different, like, do they have
fish,
a different template?
Because they have thousands of spawn.
Thousands of eggs at the same time. But in fairness to the fish, 98% of those are eaten before they even have a chance to grow. Bad news for the Lakers on Thursday. It was reported that LeBron James, we had talked on Wednesday, Andy, that, and then Thursday, I should say, that LeBron, they were going to reevaluate him in 2 weeks. They have revised the reevaluation timeline, not the return timeline, just the reevaluation timeline. Before they're even going to check under the hood and kick the tires, they're going to wait 3 weeks now instead of two.
Yeah, it's being reported now, first of all, more specifically, that it is a tendon injury in the right foot. They're starting to actually lay out more details of what's actually going on with LeBron. Like you said, he'll be reevaluated in 3 weeks. It was not specified as to whether the clock has reset or if they're talking about adding an additional week onto when the clock was set for the first 2 week evaluation, but
like COVID, like it's COVID. Like you, right. Like when have you taken your last positive test?
Exactly. But in thinking this out for these terms, I went with the gloomiest way of measuring this, which would be the clock resetting starting today, the 2nd of March, as we were recording this, the 3rd of March, as you likely hear this. If, say, LeBron was reevaluated 3 weeks from these reports, that would be on the 23rd. And let's just say everything went incredibly well and they deemed LeBron able to immediately start playing beginning on the game that they play on the 24th against the Magic. That would mean LeBron will be able to play out the last 9 games of the season. That feels ambitious.
That is a rosy scenario that they reevaluate him and he's on the court that day.
I don't know exactly.
I mean, we speculated on Thursday's show that, you know, 10 games, missing 10 games felt fairly, you know, kind of optimistic. But that, you know, you see this today. And you sort of think to yourself, could he get 5 games in before the end of the season? And more importantly, Andy, where will the Lakers be with 5 games left in the season?
Well, I honestly think these are not mutually exclusive questions. I mean, I think some of what will determine this is just where do the Lakers stand right now? Does it feel worth it to put LeBron on the court? Like, in part, just the idea of, you know, any concerns that you might have about exacerbating this, but also too, it's going to be a matter of pain tolerance. Like it is not likely, I don't think. And Chris Haynes from Bleacher Report on the This League Uncut podcast that he co-hosts with Mark Stein, which is, like everything Haynes and Stein do, worth reading, worth listening. There was one quote where Haynes said, the injury is one that LeBron could theoretically play through, so it's more of a pain management issue. This obviously means down the road, not literally this minute. So what I can say on LeBron is that sources did inform me he will not require surgery. That's good news. Right now, it's all about the time and rehabbing process. Could LeBron get out there and play right now? It'd be a risk, but I think he probably could if he necessarily had to, but it's too much of a risk. It's too much pain right now. The plan right now is to get him as much time to heal for this rehab process, but the Lakers have got to win. They've got to keep winning. They've got to buy him time. So again, it's going to be a risk-reward ratio, and I think just some pragmatic common sense involved with this. LeBron clearly wants to be out there. He's made it clear all season that this year matters to him, but at the same time, there's no point to him being stupid about it if it's really not going to end up going anywhere.
Well, but the flip side is the argument is, well, if it's just pain tolerance, he could make those games matter by playing in them. I don't mean any disrespect to Haynes. Like, it is very difficult to kind of parse, like, the what is the line between there's a risk, but, you know, you could theoretically play through it, but what is the risk and how much pain tolerance do you have and all this? Like, I was seeing, and I'm not surprised by this, but, like, you know, we tweet out the news when it's put out there, and, you know, a lot of people, well, this is, you know, if it's just pain, Kobe would be on the floor. Like, you know, A, don't put your, you know, not necessarily. There were times when Kobe sat with injury too, particularly when he got older. But also too, it's like, you know, all of this is like risk to whom? Like, you know, what is the acceptable tolerance risk? Let's say he has a tendon injury that is strained but not torn. What happens if he tears it? Like, what happens if it's torn completely? Like, if this was a multiple choice test, we'd still be in the, you know, D, not enough information given section of the world. And I think it is very, it is easy to sort of sit back and be like, well, you know, he ought to be playing, he could be playing, or whatever. I think if he could be playing, he'd be playing. And if it was, you know, there's certain things where pain tolerance, okay, technically speaking, you can't, you know, break the bone or snap the ligament or tear it. It's already torn, whatever it might be. And like, okay, if you're like a really tough guy, you could get out, but like your body doesn't allow you, your body stops. You have natural reflexes that don't allow you to do certain things when a pain threshold is high enough. So yeah, the idea that if it's just a pain management issue, you can, and it, you know, if he wasn't so soft, LeBron could go play. The human body does not allow people necessarily to just go out and ignore the signals the body sends to the brain.
Pain affects performance.
Yes.
Like it does, you know,
unless you're Dalton.
Pain don't hurt.
Pain don't hurt.
You know, but even after a while though, you could see the effects of those stab wounds that Dalton was accumulating while protecting.
No, it's true. Absolutely 100% true.
Protecting the proverbial roadhouses of the U.S. and the double deuce. It all adds up after a while. There's only so many times you can do your own stitching before it eventually just catches up to you. The movie Roadhouse, for those not familiar with what we are referencing, and if you're not familiar, shame on you. Exactly. It's also, you cannot overstate this too. LeBron is 38 years old in his 20th season, doing this stuff with more miles than anybody has ever done this before in terms of responsibilities on the court and performance on the court. What he is doing is really unprecedented, like especially when you start factoring in playoff miles and, you know, 8 straight trips to the finals, 10 in all for LeBron. There, you cannot think about this, you know, through the prism of Kobe, but really through the prism of anybody. Like, we've seen by now, LeBron really wants to play. This is really important to him. And yes, I know getting the record mattered to LeBron. There are other things that matter in LeBron's life. We've talked about this very transparently. The first and driving reason LeBron joined the Lakers was not the basketball. No, we have both conceded
this LA
many times over, but he still cares about the basketball.
Right.
And LeBron also does not want to be associated with three playoff misses in five seasons with the crown jewel franchise of the NBA. Like, he just doesn't want that. Like, that sticks to LeBron. People remember that with LeBron, even if it doesn't tarnish his quote-unquote legacy. He doesn't like that being attached to his resume.
So let's take a look here, because the Lakers, you know, at that sort of the second part of that question, like where could they be? Where could they be? Where could they be if he comes back with five games left in the season, six games left in the season? As things stand right now, we record on Thursday, going into Thursday night's games. The Lakers, by the way, most of Thursday's games has got a Clipper. You got a Clipper Golden State game. The rest of them don't really impact directly. I guess Philly at Dallas has. Dallas is still close enough, I guess, to be in this conversation about teams that the Lakers are chasing. So we'll see what happens after Thursday night. The Lakers are 2.5 games behind the Clippers for the sixth spot, two behind Dallas, a game and a half behind Minnesota, who they play Friday. Like, they are still tight. They are a game behind Utah and New Orleans for the 9 and 10. They see Utah twice before the end of the season. They're still in it. So how in it could they be in 13 games if LeBron doesn't play? We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Nissan, and Nissan's most electric player of the week is brought to you by the all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya, and the award goes to Dennis Schroeder. Schroeder's second half against the Thunder was absolutely electric in securing the Lakers' shorthanded win. 22 points in that second half, beating defenders off the dribble with a smooth first step, fast but also elegant once he's around the rim, often casually flipping that shot up. There's a beauty to it, and he'll go right at defenders in the lane, creating his own version of power and strength. He's fiercely fearless, and the Lakers will need more of those type of performances from Dennis Schroeder as LeBron and D'Angelo Russell recover and everybody holds their breath about Anthony Davis's availability. The 2023 Nissan Ariya packs pinyu to your seat power and premium intelligence all in one EV. The all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya, the EV for people who love to drive. Shop now at NissanUSA.com.
So, like, we are at that place where you start checking, Andy, like, and parsing every single bit of information. I noted the standings before the break and where the Lakers are, and, you know, they're a game behind the Pelicans, who are slumping, behind a game behind the Jazz, game and a half behind Minnesota, but they get a game with those guys on Friday. They play, tonight they play, they've got their two games behind Dallas. They'll see the Clippers again, correct? In the early April. So they got a game against those guys who are not playing particularly well in the post Westbrook era. A nice moment of Schadenfreude for Lakers fans. I think we've had enough challenges, Andy, that we can engage in a little bit of petty. It's fine. But you look at the schedule, and like, who comes when is important. Minnesota on Friday, Golden State on Sunday. Steph is like real close to a return, but he might not be back in time for that one. Or if he is back, won't have had a lot of practice time. I think he's back on the practice floor, but they're not sure when he's going to play, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, Memphis comes back on Tuesday, but then you have Toronto. Who knows what you're going to get with the Raptors these days? The Knicks are playing really well, but then you get New Orleans and Houston, and Dallas and Orlando. What are they doing at that point? Oklahoma City again, two games against Chicago, another game against Minnesota, another
Patrick
game.
Patrick Beverly's revenge game, Brian.
No, Andy, two Patrick Beverly revenge games.
He wants to knock, he said this before, he wants to knock the Lakers out of the playoffs. Some might say that was also his goal during the first 2 months with the Lakers. Hi-oh!
Yeah. See what you did there. secret agent Patrick Beverly. And so, when the Western Conference kind of looked like, Dallas was getting on a bit of a roll and Golden State looked like they were playing better, and, Memphis was Memphis and Minnesota had a moment where they looked like they were improving. Like, this second, I wouldn't say second half, this post All-Star break schedule looked a little bit more intimidating than it does now. Minnesota kind of sucks again, and Golden State's still kind of struggling, particularly on the road where they have been awful this year. New Orleans is really down. You see them You get two games against Houston. You have a Dallas team that hasn't gelled yet. You have two games against Chicago, who aren't that good. You get another game against Oklahoma City. Like, it's there. You know, yeah, sure, you get Phoenix twice. You see Memphis. But, like, it's not brutal. It could be a lot worse, that's for sure. They showed on Wednesday that they're capable, certainly, of playing with, you know, this level of competition, even without LeBron. They did it without AD, and they still, you know, beat a slumping Oklahoma City team. So you get Anthony Davis back. You hopefully get D'Angelo Russell back at some point. If, you know, not Friday, I'm not terribly confident he's going to play Sunday, but at some point he's going to play again, right? So let's say you get 16, 17 games of D'Lo. AD plays most of the games that are left. With that schedule, it is not crazy to think that the Lakers are still playing meaningful games, five, six, you know, games left in the season when LeBron, in theory, could come back.
Look, they've held up their end of the bargain so far. I mean, they've won five of their last seven games. They've been maintaining the pace, and I'd even say, and then some, that they need to try to keep themselves in this hunt. This is clearly a better team than pre-deadline, pre-Hachimura, basically that period between bringing in Rui and then just reshuffling the entire roster. And something we've also talked about too, not every single win counts and every single win matters, but they're not all created equally. Mm-hmm. Like the games they have coming up against Phoenix, it's you'd like to win those games, but they're not as consequential as beating Minnesota, beating Golden State, beating the teams that are really that directly in front of you, particularly if Phoenix ends up as good as people think they're going to be over this final stretch with Durant. They're not likely the Lakers going to be able to catch Phoenix anyway. So
real quick on that, Andy, too, like you also start to get into the stretch of season where the timing of the game matters. The game against Phoenix is the second to last game of the season. It is very possible that the Suns could be locked into a seed in the second to last game. Now, it could be a nationally televised game. Does Kevin Durant sit out against the Lakers and all that? Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, they may not play everybody that game. Like, we're going to start to see some of that. Like, the last game of the season is against Utah. They play Utah twice in the last four games. What if Utah has slipped out of the top 10? What does that look like? You know, like there are all kinds of scenarios. And by the way, all of these other teams are saying the exact same thing about playing the Lakers at the end of the season. Like if the Lakers fall apart over the next 10 games, LeBron's not going to be on the floor. AD is not going to be on the floor. All of this stuff comes into the, and it totally includes the Lakers. We are not being Pollyanna about like what their chances are. All I'm saying is the schedule is about as good as it could possibly be. They are home more than they are on the road. They're not playing many elite teams in the league. And it's possible they might catch a break here and there with who takes the floor when they do play the good teams.
I mean, in a lot of ways, Brian, the formula for all of this and the overarching points don't change. The Lakers need to keep playing well. They have done very well since reconfiguring their roster. They've managed to actually do pretty well despite the absences of some pretty important people. I mean, honestly, what jumped out at me, and you know, we don't have time necessarily for this to be a full-on discussion. We'll have plenty of other opportunities down the road to talk about it. But when I saw this updated news about LeBron combined with what we learned yesterday with Anthony Davis having, you know, a scheduled absence despite being told that nobody was ever going to miss a back-to-back moving forward anymore, it just speaks to the impracticalities of having a team built around LeBron and AD as your superstars. Yeah. Like if this is the path that the Lakers continue moving forward, then this is not going to be the last of these conversations that we have.
Oh, because God, no.
It just, oh, no. LeBron no. is going to be 39 next year in his 21st season. You don't expect a guy like that to be available all the time. Like LeBron's current availability is in and of itself pretty damn miraculous. And then with him connected to Anthony Davis, who, despite being in his prime, gets hurt all of the time. There's always going to be a razor's edge that you're standing on if this is the path that you continue going down. And, you know, I mentioned this a lot heading into this season, much less where we are right now. There has to be serious conversations within the organization about, is this a viable path moving forward, or are we just wish casting?
Well, I mean, we can talk a little bit about that after the break. But you know, there's a lot of attention just paid on maintenance now. And like, what is the amount of games you can expect? How can you get guys through practices? What is the right through seasons? What is the right amount of stress and strain that you can put on them, and the best way to keep guys healthy? Certainly that's a topic of conversation the Lakers are acutely interested in. So, you know, we'll maybe dig into that a little bit next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Built Bar. If you're looking for a great taste and treat, but you don't want all the fat and the calories, you got to try yourself a Built Bar. We're all getting through the holidays. I'm playing some pickleball tonight because I'm trying to take off that President's Day weight. But at the same time, I do not want to sacrifice taste, because that is the whole point.
That Taft cosplay of yours is just not treating you well.
Right. So you got to try Built Bars. And with Built, healthy actually tastes great. They're perfect for getting that holiday weight off. They're covered in, as always, 100% real chocolate, great flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond. They taste like a candy bar, but just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, but 17 grams of protein. And that's what you actually want. You don't need to wait around for a box. Like we've always talked about, you can go to built.com, order them through the site, and that's awesome. Still works great. But if you want to just speed up the process, you can actually go to your local Walmart, go to the pharmacy section, you can go to a Sam's Club. However you want to do this, pick up just a box of Built Bars, different flavors, and thank us later. Enjoy.
You know, I mean, this question, I mean, fans are, I think, were really frustrated with both. I think they were frustrated with everybody on Wednesday, less so maybe after they won the game, but going into it, certainly, Andy, just this notion. At first, it seemed like, well, AD couldn't play because he's hurt. If he's hurt, he's hurt. Sucks, and that's AD. He's always hurt, and so you're frustrated about that. Then it turns out, well, no, he's not hurt. He could play. And so are you frustrated then with AD for not overruling the organization? But that's not really how it works anymore, if it ever did. And then are you frustrated with the Lakers for setting a protocol and sticking to it? Are you upset with the Lakers for setting a protocol and then not explaining it in a way that made it, you know, so in a way that protected AD from this outcome? That's what bothered me. I felt that like the Lakers really left AD hanging out to dry by saying, everybody's playing, nobody's sitting back-to-backs, it's go time, and then sitting him. You know, don't say that if he's on a protocol and the organization demands he sticks to it. The load management thing and like the how you protect guys, I think, is so difficult to kind of figure out, because I don't think it's the same. Like, you know, there is no right way to do this for the NBA, because probably what Anthony Davis needs, you know, Paul George had some really frank. What was that? Who was he talking to for this?
He was on the Old Man and Three podcast
with JJ Redick. Yeah. And so he was talking about how he thinks that guys sit too much, that when you played two a days and you practiced 4 out of 5 days and then took a day off or whatever it might be,
when he entered the league.
Right. It built up stuff. And you know, your body becomes accustomed to that kind of wear. Now you're starting, you're stopping, you're breaking, whatever. I mean, the flip side is guys used to get hurt all the time back then too, you know, and like constantly, and careers were probably shortened and all these other things. And we just, you know, we say with baseball, like guys never used to tear their, you know, their elbows like they do. Well, yeah, they did it all the time. You just never heard about them ever again. They just they disappeared because their careers were over. I feel like that happens in basketball. I don't know. The Lakers, short and long term, have a real challenge trying to figure out how to keep Anthony Davis and LeBron James healthy, whether it's for 20 games at the end of this season or 82 next season. And there's no really good answer to any of it. I don't know if the science is clear on it. I don't know if there's sports medicine I don't think there's a good answer or a real preventative, because the game is just brutal, and like the amount of games they've played is brutal. They start playing when they're 10, they're 7, and they play nothing but basketball for 25 years. Like, the mileage is insane.
Yeah, and I also think, and I remember we had Jeffrey Stotts on a podcast either, I don't know, maybe a year ago, something like that. He's a well-known sports medicine guy. And I ran past my theory that I think part of what has piled up the injuries beyond, it seems anecdotally, to me at least, like there are more, if nothing else, stars being unavailable more. Like it feels like more on like a game-to-game basis. Like you talked about before, stars used to get hurt, but it seemed like they would be hurt, then they'd heal up, then they'd come back, as opposed to start, stop.
We're right, because rest games, maintenance games, were not part of the game, were not part of the NBA in the 80s and 90s.
Right, and you know, the whole load management thing really got started with Greg Popovich and looking to maintain, you know, the core of Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. And I think what gets lost in that sometimes is the idea that, particularly with Tim Duncan, he was older in his career. And this is something that, had it not become more of a league-wide talking point and something that ends up like in the echo chamber, it might not have become that big of a thing. But like, you know, Paul George, on one hand, he came into the league when it wasn't exactly like this, and he knows what it means to get through a brutal injury, because Paul George had an absolutely ugly leg injury that took him quite a while.
He broke his leg, like right. I don't know if it was his femur or I forget exactly, but like one of the big ones in his leg, he just snapped it.
Yeah. I mean, there were concerns at the time that it could be career ending. So he understands the process of getting back on the court. He understands the process of rehab. He understands the process of body maintenance, but he may not also fully understand everything that goes into the medical planning of the modern NBA. I also think, and I've said this before, that I think a lot of this is much more team-driven, because owners see these massive contracts as long-term investments that they want to get the greatest return on, and part of that greatest return is playoff runs, because that is extra money, right, as opposed to the 82 games that are already baked into the equation.
Right, but even the slightly less cynical version of that, of playoff achievement, like you want your team, especially on contending teams, to do well.
Sure.
And so your guys have to be available, you know, but
most owners are not Donald Sterling, who never gave a rat's ass if they won or not.
But like, there's also what's interesting too, to hear George talk about that, is that, yeah, you know, I'm sure in 2000, you know, he broke his leg in 2014, I think it was, you know, came back, played the 81 games the following year and whatever, but like, he's 32 now. He's played, you know, 700 and almost 800 games in the NBA, not counting the playoffs. And, you know, there's probably a big difference between, yeah, I can go do it in that way, practice all the time, play really hard and, you know, play games or whatever, when I'm 24 versus when I'm 32, when I've played 4 seasons in the league or 5 seasons in the league versus 11 or 12. Like, ultimately it's a little like football when they talk about like the safety aspects of football and this and that. The human body, basketball players have gotten more athletic. They've gotten stronger. The game has spread out. So they jump more.
The thing I brought up to Jeffrey Stotts, I sidetracked myself a little bit there, but the idea that people debate the physicality of today's NBA versus the 80s or 90s or even early 2000s. I think JJ Redick had a really interesting conversation about that on a recent podcast. And I think some of this depends on how you're defining physicality. And right. I'm not, frankly, I don't find the conversation that interesting. But what I do think is potentially very different about today's game, and I brought this up to Jeffrey Stotts, and he thought at least there could be some validity, is I think today's players are left more vulnerable to soft tissue injuries, which we see a lot of, because they have to run around so much court space while going so fast.
Yes.
Like, you're vulnerable.
They're covering more ground. They are, you know, pace has become a big thing. The three-point shot. I mean, really, you know, look, the Lakers ran through the 80s and this and that, but go back and check the scores of, you know, go watch the Jordan documentary you know, the thing that sticks out more than anything is, you know, you show those fourth quarter Jordan highlights in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and it's, you know, 89-83 with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Like, they just, the pace wasn't the same. Yeah, maybe they were pounding on each other in the half court more, but I'm not totally sure that actually is more punishing to players than the amount of running, the amount of space you have to cover to try to play defense now and all. And they're bigger and they're stronger. They're better. You know, the 11th player on a roster now is better than the 11th player was 15, 20, certainly 30 years ago. And there are limits as to what the human body is designed to do, particularly when you're 6'9", 6'10", moving with the speed and athleticism that these guys do. I don't think there is an answer to this. And how do you keep players from getting hurt? I think if they play fewer games, it might help. But once you get a guy like LeBron, who is in this category, certainly Anthony Davis, is once the injuries pile up, you know, with the exception of like Brooke Lopez or something, who seems to have turned around a career of that looked like it was going to be totally derailed by injury and has managed to stay both pretty healthy and oddly productive as a defensive player, as a side note there. But he's not exactly a high flyer, you know? I mean, you know.
Look, he just had a severe back injury too, though. I mean,
sure.
It's difficult. I mean,
he played 13 games last year. Yes.
Yeah. It's really difficult to just stay on the court, particularly the longer you've been, I think, in this more modern NBA that is just so fast and taxing in different ways.
Yeah,
and look, there could be, I mean, just taking it full circle before we go, there absolutely could be validity to Paul George's theory that guys are not physically preparing themselves.
Maybe. And it may be true for certain players and untrue for others.
But I don't know what to do with that. Nope. And I'm not sure, like you said, Brian, anybody really knows.
There are other aspects of, you know, the amount of specialization that kids have. Like, they show up in the league now different than they used to because they've played nothing but basketball for 10 years before they even get to the league. Nobody plays three sports anymore. Nobody plays, even my kids, like you know, who are not going to turn pro, are funneled into their activities very quickly. A single sport. I hate it, but I don't know what to do about it either. But this larger conversation that you're getting about, like, what did the Lakers do about this, is, I think, going to be the major theme of our offseason. So that's something to look forward to. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Again, 13,000 subscribers. Thank you guys so much for your support of the channel. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show. We'll be, I think the plan is to try to record after Friday night's game against Minnesota. So certainly check it out. We're going to do our best to get something up for you. And at worst, enjoy your weekend. We'll see everybody Monday.